How does error find its way into the church? I've written an article in the latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal titled From Exception to Rule, How Error Replaces Truth in the Church, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jordan Cooper details his journey from Calvinism to Lutheranism. The latest Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You wouldn't think that you could find a good place, a good starting point to discuss the value of human life in something like a zombie movie or a TV series on the zombie apocalypse. But Scott Klusendorf, our guest coming up here in just a second, actually has a rather substantive one. At that, in fact, he's calling it the substance view. It's one shared by many who are thinking about the value of human life. We'll talk about pro-lifers and the substance view with Scott Klusendorf for the last half hour of Issues Etc. Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. He's author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. And he's also written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled, What the Walking Dead Can Teach Pro-Lifers. Scott, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back, Todd. And what a topic, zombies and pro-lifers.
Okay, bringing them together, as I thought no one ever would ever need to do, tell us about where, and this will help explain the term we're going to be using here, the substance view. Tell us about where you encountered this substance view of the human person on television recently.
Well, what happened was last Halloween, I stayed up after taking my kids trick-or-treating, and on the TV, which I have to admit, I seldom watch TV, but for some reason that night I did, and AMC had this series they were launching that night called The Walking Dead. I've never been a zombie guy at all. Never thought I would like it at all, but I watched this thing, and I was absolutely gripped by it. It's real. It seems real, you know, as real as a zombie thing can be. It's well-acted. The writing is superb, and I watched this series, and I got hooked. And to just back up a little bit, the main question I saw coming through was the question of, number one, why even bother with human life? But then in episode six came this question, are humans nothing more than their physical brains? That is, are all of my thoughts predetermined by synapse firings of the brain? And if so, what follows from that? And I just found that to be an unbelievable Christian worldview topic, especially wrapped around a story of humans trying to escape a zombie apocalypse and fighting for survival and facing overwhelming odds and being pushed to the brink of despair. Just fascinating stuff.
So let's contrast this, as we call it, substance view, that we are really the sum of the material interactions that, and some of them very complex, that make up our brains. Let's contrast that with perhaps a more traditional Christian view of the same.
Well, what happens is in episode six, this tiny band of human survivors escapes into the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, and they get away from the zombie hordes, the walking dead, who, if they bite you, you become one of them, essentially. And they escape inside where they find the lone surviving CDC staffer who stayed behind, a guy by the name of Edward Jenner. And he shows them a video clip of how the zombie bite destroys a human being and causes them to come back as one of these zombies. And here's what he says, speaking of the human brain, as he's walking them through this video presentation. He points at the brain and says, it's a person's life, his experiences, memories, it's everything. Somewhere in that organic wiring, he says, all of those ripples of light that you're looking at is you, the thing that makes you unique and human. And to make sure the point isn't lost, he zooms in on the frontal lobes for a closer look and says this, those are the synapses, electrical impulses in the brain. They carry all the messages. They determine everything a person says, does, or thinks from the moment of birth until the moment of death. In other words, Dr. Jenner is communicating a worldview that we call scientific materialism. He says we are nothing but our physical brains. All of our thoughts, feelings, convictions are determined by the hard wiring. Now, that contrasts, Todd, with a Christian worldview that says we are not mere physical machines. We are a dynamic union of body and soul. I am more than just my body. I am not a body that just happens to be predetermined by hard wiring. Rather, I'm a deep union of body and soul. And as a result, it's not right to reduce human beings to mere physical machines. That's the difference between the two views.
What does the substance view, if one is consistent in holding it, what does it say about human beings at earlier stages of development, in particular, the preborn?
Well, the substance view says you are identical to your former embryonic self, Todd. You are the same being now as you were then. And the short definition of the substance view is that living things maintain identity through time and change. A dog that loses a leg is still a dog by nature because it has a dog nature. It is not what it is because it has a certain summation of physical parts. Rather, the dog is what it is because of the nature that defines its properties and orders its capabilities. Human beings, at whatever stage of development they happen to be at, are a substance, a rational being, a being that is identical to itself through all stages of development. So, for example, you are the same being now as you were at age 6, at age 6 months, and 6 hours. The changes that have happened to you are accidental in nature, meaning they don't change the essential you. You remain the same thing. So why does this matter to the pro-life view? Well, really simply, it's this. You are identical to your former fetal self. Thus, if you have intrinsic value and a right to life now, you had it then as well.
So even the substance view, which can be faulted in other respects for being, in the worst-case scenario, kind of grounded in... I think we talked recently with Jay Richards, and he called it a radical reduction to material or something like that.
The substance view, he called that?
Well, no, he's talking about how the notion that we are merely the
right.
sum of physical
yep.
interactions. Mm-hmm. While it can be faulted for in other respects, it sounds as though it actually argues in favor of the pro-life position.
Well, if one takes the view that science alone should determine truth, which is the view of modern scientism, then yes, the scientific view that the unborn are human beings should not be in dispute. But here's the problem. Science can only get us so far. Science can tell me what something is, but science cannot tell me how to value it. Science cannot say, for example, that you shouldn't kick your dog after beating your kid. Science can tell you what your kid is, it can tell you what your dog is, but in terms of how you treat them, that's not a matter for science. So science is limited in terms of its ability to give us the truth about ethics and how we ought to behave.
Is the character that you mentioned from the zombie story, is that man, when he is talking about the human brain, is he going beyond science?
He is. In fact, he's no longer doing science when he says that everything about you can be reduced to your physical brain. That is not a scientific statement. That's a philosophical view of the world. It's a deterministic philosophic view. And it has a number of difficulties that make it troubling for anyone, I think, who's willing to look at the issue, not just Christians. For example, consider this. If personal identity through time and change is not possible because we're reduced to physical things that change, that means I'm not the same person I was 5 minutes ago when my cells were made up of different stuff in certain parts of my body. It also means that how can I be held responsible for a crime that I did years ago when my body was different physical stuff? Those are two real big issues for the view that says we are nothing but physical body parts that happen to accidentally interact with each other.
So when we are talking with people, and I think a lot of people will take that view, they will, because it's kind of convenient morally,
yeah,
to say we're machines. Science has now revealed that even down to the subatomic level, we are essentially dead matter moving in a mechanistic way. We're machines. How should Christians respond to that, and especially when making the case to defend, we mentioned the preborn, we also need to talk about people who are at the other end of mental development where things start to degenerate.
Well, here's the biggest problem I have. How can scientific materialism tell us why anything has a right to life, Todd, not just the unborn? According to scientific materialism, the universe came from nothing and was caused by nothing, meaning human beings are cosmic accidents at whatever stage of development they're in. So the problem for the materialist is not just that he can't say why the unborn has value. He can't say why anything has value as I see it. I don't know how he can come up with intrinsic human value, moral obligations, in a world that came about by blind random chance. But here's another thing the Christian needs to point out. How is rationality even possible in that kind of world? Think about it. If all of my thoughts are predetermined, we're not free to think any differently than we do. Indeed, one set of synapse firings in the brain is going to be no more rational than the next set that's firing off. So rationality vanishes. But at the same time, if Dr. Jenner is right that all of our thoughts are predetermined and we're not able to think any differently than we do, then why is he even trying to persuade his small group there, his audience, that he is right about this? It seems that he's wasting his time because their thoughts are predetermined just like his are, meaning the people he's talking to are not free to think any differently than they do.
We're talking about pro-lifers and the substance view of human value. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. When we come back, we'll talk about other thinkers that are defending this view.
After more than 20 years, we thought we'd bring you some fresh new ideas for Raging Rivers Water Park. Try this. Raging Rivers, home of the awesome wave pool. Not bad. Raging Rivers does have an awesome wave pool. But what about the endless river, body flume, swamp pool, treehouse harbor, itty bitty surf city, and more? How about Raging Rivers? It's closer than you think. Well, it is just a short scenic drive from anywhere in the Metro St. Louis area. What else? Raging Rivers, affordable fun in the sun. Raging Rivers, the family fun destination. Raging Rivers, a great place for teens. Raging Rivers, open daily on the Great River Road in Grafton, Illinois. You know, these are all wonderful, but they just don't capture the essence of Raging Rivers. The thrills, the relaxation, the absolute ultimate water park experience. Guess there's only one way to say it. Raging Rivers, it's cool when it's hot. Save $3 off the regular admission price with coupons available at your Schnucks.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hi, this is Kate in Japan, and I'm commenting on the program you had about the Unification Church.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues, Etc. around the world.
The most important point is to say I love your show and thank you for doing what you do. Bye from Japan.
Old theology, new technology, Issues, Etc. Worldwide. Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issues, Etc. Issuesetc.org.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues, Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues, Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. Issuesetc.org. Stay connected. Issuesetc.org.
Well, here's a post we received today from Harry in Finland. He said he just finished listening to the last part of the series on the Christian's mission with Dr. Ken Sherb. On our website, issuesetc.org, he says, fantastic, keep up the great work. Well, we worked our entire series, 9-part series with Dr. Ken Cherb on the Christian's mission from Dr. Ken Cherb's new book, The Christian's Mission, which is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. And there's a reason for it. It rightly grounds the Christian's mission, not in good intentions, not in your work to somehow do things for God, but in what Christ has done for you in his suffering, death, and resurrection, the gifts that he gives to you in the divine service every Lord's Day, and the vocation that he gives as a gift to you to serve your neighbor in your everyday life. That's why it's called The Christian's Mission. Finally, a book that gets it right. You can find out more about this book at our website, issuesetc.org, or call and order The Christian's Mission, 1-800-325-3040. Scott, there are other thinkers that are defending the substance view of human dignity. Why are they doing this?
I think they are responding to this reductionistic philosophy that says humans are nothing but predetermined machines, because if that's not responded to by Christian philosophers, for example, Paul Cope and Francis J. Beckwith, William Lane Craig, J.P. Moreland, Scott Ray, these are just a few names of people who have weighed in on this, and there are others. If Christian philosophers do not respond to this reductionistic, materialistic view, the whole idea of the gospel having any meaning or human beings having meaning vanishes. We're cosmic accidents. How do you make sense of the gospel in that world? And Scripture is very clear, Todd, that humans are not mere materialistic machines. Paul talks about it is better to be absent from the body and present with the Lord. He writes elsewhere that he has this heavenly vision where he's unsure if he's in the body or apart from it. And you see examples in Scripture of writers making the claim that we are more than our body parts. And I think that view has to be defended at a very sophisticated level in today's philosophical environment.
Do you think this no more than our body parts argument that so many buy into also accounts not only for the devaluing of life, but also for the general kind of moral decline that we witness all around us in our culture?
Oh, I think it has to, Todd. Again, let's go back to the rival explanations here. One says humans have value in virtue of the kind of thing they are, and the kind of thing they are creatures who are rational in nature that bear the image of their maker. Those creatures maintain personal identity through time and change. So that means my choices matter over time. I matter over time. I don't change just because my cells change. The other view says we came from nothing, we're caused by nothing, we're cosmic accidents. So again, not only can you not account for intrinsically valuable human beings in that kind of worldview, how do you accommodate the idea of objective moral values? Where do these objective moral values come from if the universe is the result of a cosmic accident? It seems to me that the only thing we're left with, and this is what some materialists have suggested, is that these moral facts, they're just out there. They're brute facts of the universe. Or they'll claim that it's in the genes, somehow morality can be reduced to that. But none of these are satisfactory explanations for how we account for real right and wrong.
Can we account for anything with that worldview? I mean, not just those questions, but human history. I mean, human history will then, if it's consistent, sounds like it will boil down to the materialistically predetermined. I mean, you can't blame Adolf Hitler because, come on, and you can't, no more than you could blame the people who are trying to save lives during the Second World War.
Well, yeah, as Christian philosophers have pointed out, you're reduced to saying that the difference between Adolf Hitler and Mother Teresa was one of chromosomal makeup. But I think we know better than that. And if it is indeed the result of physical predetermined things going on in the body of a person as to whether they do good or bad, how can we hold them accountable for good or bad? They're just acting in a way that they're predetermined to do, and they have no freedom in the issue.
When we reach the end of life, Scott, we have what some people view as kind of a reversal of value. We start out worth nothing or worth whatever our mothers, while still in the womb, would attach to us. And then at the other end of life, the assignment of value falls to maybe family, maybe doctors, maybe panels at a hospital, maybe even just kind of the general consensus of the culture. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, that's exactly right. If a materialistic worldview is the one that's in play, it's ironic that we are determined to be machines, but we also end up being sustained by them at the end of life. I just think the substance view is so much richer in its ability to explain why we ought to value the elderly. The substance view says that our human equality is not grounded in some accidental property that may come and go in the course of our lifetimes, for example, such as our immediately exercisable capacity for self-awareness or pain reception, pick any category you want. Rather, our value is in our common human nature. In fact, if you were to look around that studio and see Jeff and whoever else is there with you and ask yourself, why are we all equal in this room? The only answer is that we share the same common human nature. Our self-awareness levels are all over the map. Our abilities to do physical things are all over the map. Some of us could run 10 miles right after work tonight and have no trouble with it at all. Others of us would have trouble going 10 steps. So what makes us equal if we vary in terms of our intellectual, our awareness, and our physical abilities? Well, the only thing we share in common is our human nature that was there from the beginning, from the moment we began to exist. Now, of course, secularists like Dr. Jenner can deny this, but only at a terrible cost. Because if our value is grounded in some physical thing that may come and go, that means human equality is a myth. Those who have more of that particular property would be more valuable than those with less.
With only about 30 seconds here, we sometimes hear well-meaning, even Christians who ought to know better, when they're watching father, mother, grandfather degenerate in a hospital bed or a nursing home bed, well, that's not grandma anymore. How should we respond kindly and carefully respond to that with essentially the substance view?
Well, my first question would be, why isn't it grandma? Is it because she can't do what she used to do? Well, what if she were to regain that? Let's say, for example, we say, well, that's not grandma because she's not self-aware anymore. Suppose she got it back for 3 or 4 days. Would she suddenly go back to being grandma again? And we end up with this, what philosophers called this, the episode view of human value, meaning your value is based on a particular episode you're experiencing at the moment, either self-awareness or non-self-awareness. And that, of course, just becomes absurd. It's so much more rational, Todd, to simply say we all have value as long as we're living because of the kind of thing we are. We're identical to ourselves through all the changes we go through because we have that same human nature. And human nature does not come in degrees. You either have it or you don't. And that is the only basis for human equality.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute, author of the book The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. When you purchase The Case for Life at our website using the Amazon.com link that we provide for you there, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Issues ETC. Click Listen on Demand. Look for that link. He's also written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled What the Walking Dead Can Teach Pro-Lifers. Scott, it's always a pleasure. Keep up the good work. Thanks for being a guest.
Todd, I look forward to talking to you, and I know you'll be the same person then as you are now because your nature will be the same.
Nicely put.
We'll see you then.
Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., open lines. You've probably seen it on YouTube or you've heard about it on the news. What do you think about the Nashville pastor's prayer before Saturday night's NASCAR race? Boogity, boogity, boogity in Jesus' name, thanking God for the cars and his smoking hot wife. Open lines tomorrow on Issues, Etc. Give it some thought. Call us tomorrow. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.